Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And my very special guest is David Sarita. David, I wanted to ask you a question. Poignant question. Based upon these experiences that you've had with extraordinary bliss, ecstasy, that kind of thing, I've experienced lots of good times in my life, and I realise that once those good times are over, I'm often left with a sense of longing, perhaps even a sense of regret that those times are no longer with me, and I spend the rest of my time trying to get it back. Is this in any way familiar to you?
Well, yeah, it's harder with spiritual experiences like this, because I can say, you know, the great times I've had with my friends, the times, you know, the good times I've had skiing and skydiving, and, you know, think of the best sex and love and intimacy I've ever had in my life. And I think how there are these huge gaps in life where you don't connect into those places of normal human, you know, enjoyment, and how deep the longing is there. When I got back from the seventh heaven, the longing was so intense to be with God and to be in heaven that there was nothing I could do on earth that could compare to it. And it was actually later than that, the experience in 1987, that 86, the end of 86, that I took up skydiving, and I said, you know, I want to just take up skydiving because it'll increase the odds that I would just, you know, accidentally die. And I would get to go back. And I went to India. I asked, you know, I met with the Dalai Lama. I met with all these high Buddhist lamas. And I said, does anybody know where I was? Like, where was I in the universe? And it wasn't until I read this Buddhist Lankavatara Sutra that there was a clear description that the Buddha had described, even in the Dhammapada, these seven super states of consciousness, and that when he was born as Prince Siddhartha, it took him 400 lifetimes up to that point to perfect the samadhis 1 through 6, which are all the ones that I went through. The super luminous fields that I went through are the six levels of samadhi that precede nirvana. And nirvana starts at the seventh. And I had never crossed the seventh. I saw it, and it's so unimaginable to even be in the sixth. But what the Buddha was saying in the sutra is samadhis 1 through 6 are just practice. They're not permanent states of consciousness, which is why you go into it, and then it's gone. And then you long for it like crazy. You have to find out how to get back in it. And then you eventually find out, and, you know, now I can get into the first, second, and third on my own through meditation. You know, it's taken me years, mega years, to be able to do that. But I can't get anywhere near the sixth on my own. And to cross the seventh, there's a choice to go into extinction, because in the seventh, you literally disappear into super fields of levels of ecstasy that are, you're not a body, you're actually the whole universe. And that's why nirvana is called extinction, because you decide, I don't want to be a person anymore, I just want to merge with the totality of the universe. But at that point, Buddha says you have this choice to be a bodhisattva and come back and help others. And the bodhisattvas eventually become so powerful, they can create whole paradise realms with their minds, whole heaven realms, where disciples can live for thousands of years before they ever have to come back to a horrible place like this is becoming. And they eventually attain the eighth and the ninth. Well, in deep Christian mysticism, in the Nag Hammadi Library, there's a gospel called the Treatise on the Eighth and the Ninth, and the Eighth and the Ninth Heavens are exclusively for these super beings. You know, people eventually attain these super levels of compassion and want to house or create paradise in a heaven realm for other beings to live on. So, holy cow, I got my answer, and I said, well, now how do I get back into that state? And I meditated, and even though I could reach my formal levels of peace and kind of a smooth, velvety ecstasy, it's like, this isn't cutting it. I didn't stop meditating, but I was very disappointed that I couldn't do it. And I would cry. I remember one time crying on the floor in my room, and you know, I just need to go back. I need to go back. And what happened is in 1994, that year, tree planting, the Canadian government decided to fine me because I owed $1,000 in back taxes. They wiped out about, you know, the equivalent of about $20,000 in today's money out of my bank account. I had no money, nowhere to live because of this huge unfair fine they gave me. And I ended up pitching a tent on my dad's ranch in Topanga, California that year. And in October, there were severe rainstorms. So I had just failed my business called the Green and Blue Corporation, where a partner and I tried to raise money for non-radioactive nuclear helium-3 fusion and oil spill cleanup technologies and hydrogen breakthroughs. This was in the late 80s we were doing this. No, the mid-80s. No, sorry, the late 80s and early 90s. And then, so 94, that company's broke. I have no money. And I'm living in my tent, and my dad's house is being renovated, and there's horses in the corral, and I'm sleeping next to the horses, really. And I got a BMW parked in the mud. And the rain is pouring down, and I pitched my tent in a gully, and a river of water starts pouring through the inside of my tent, and I start getting hypothermia, shaking and freezing to death. And I said, you know, I've had it. You know, this is it. I don't want to go in the house. I don't want to get warm. And my briefcase with all my, you know, all my income and all my business papers were floating in the water. Like, that's how much water was in my tent. And I was so cold, I left my body, and I remember seeing the auras around the cactuses and the plants in California. And I floated over to the oak tree where there was this giant crucifix that was made of granite and a baptismal pool underneath it, humming the sound of the angels. You could hear the angels coming from the water. And I fell in spirit into the pool of water, and all of my suffering was cleansed. You know, in Christianity, what you call the cleansing of the Holy Ghost, it cleans my whole spirit of all suffering, but there's still no ecstasy. And I float above the rain clouds, and the sun had not risen yet. You could see a glow in the horizon. I said, oh my God, I must be dead. I mean, I left my body. I'm up in the sky. Like, what's going to happen? Like, holy cow, I froze to death. And there's no ecstasy. Just feel just great. No pain, no emotional scarring. You know, it's all gone. And all of a sudden, millions of atoms of light, they're like tiny little stars the size of atoms, came from every direction. And this deafening, thunderous clap. And the atoms come rushing together, and they form the body of Christ in front of me. And, you know, I'm mostly Buddhist at this time, so this is a real shocker. And Jesus is standing there blazing like 1,000 of our suns, unimaginable levels of ecstasy. If I counted all the ecstasy on my journey 10 years before going through the seven heavens, it doesn't compare to what's coming from him. I can't look. He's too powerful. Oh, my God, I fall flat on my face. Oh, I look at him. Oh, my God, I can't believe the whole universe is coming from this one being. Oh, my, I've never met a being this powerful, this blinding. And he comes over to me, and I hold his feet, and I'm so blissed out. There's so much love. I'm crying my eyes out. And imagine crying from ecstasy, not from an emotional trauma or scarring. You're crying from too much ecstasy and too much love. And he's just pouring love on me. And he starts teaching me about the atom, the subatomic universe, quantum physics, you know, his true message, how the church destroyed his message, why the world's so corrupt. I mean, he's telling me all this stuff. And I look up at him, oh my God, it's like you're looking at the source of the power of all of the creation. And it's so devastating to think that one being, it contains the all. It doesn't seem possible. There's no way to describe experientially what it's like to look at one face, and the entire universe seems to be manifest from it. I mean, I'm just a little human. I mean, what do I know? But that's what it seems like. And so I can't look at him. Look at him for 1 second, look down. Look at him for 1 second, look down. And then the meeting ended. I go back into my body. And I was so happy. I'm alive, and I didn't even have the sniffles, and I'd previously been freezing to death, and I go running in the house, and I tell my dad, oh, my God, I met Jesus. It was so incredible. He's, like, having his tea and with his wife, and, you know, I'm all covered in mud and wet, soaking wet, sit by the fire. And from that day, with within 3 days, I could see the dead. I could see them instantly in the middle of the night. I'd feel this static electricity. I ended up building a yurt on a huge deck that I built on the hillside in Topanga.
Sorry, what's a yurt?
A yurt is like, you can Google them. They're like really high-quality tents, basically.
All right.
It's a low-cost form of housing, and I built it myself and bought this $3,500 giant yurt with 9-foot ceilings, and I put a bed in there, made a room. And I lived like that for 5 years, and Christ would only visit me in between tree planting when I was in there. And he visited me 3 times there, and then the ghosts, like every other night, there were ghosts floating around. People were coming to see me on the astral plane, and I'm looking at them. And I'm going, oh my God, I'm really seeing this with my eyes open. And when Princess Diana died, she was, the next morning the sun was up and she was sitting on the edge of my bed with a thin strip of white light around her, and she's looking at me saying, I can't believe they killed me. And I'm like, what are you doing here? I mean, I had been working on landmines. Actually, at that point in my life, I was working for Department of Defense, and I was president of a company on the detection of buried landmines and hidden explosives for airport security, and I didn't want to leave my yurt. I liked living in that thing. I had my BMW, went to work, wore a suit and tie, and came home to the tent. And I saw her. I saw her so clearly. She didn't leave me for at least an hour and a half. She would not leave my side. And I saw hundreds of ghosts and spirit beings and star beings over the course of about 14 years. All the time. It was like living in a multi-dimensional universe. It was happening every other night. And there's so many different beings I've met. So many. I've seen ancient Native Indians. I've seen ancient Africans. One night there were 3 balls of light. One was white, one was fuchsia, and one was pinkish. No, purpley, blue. And they were about the size of beach balls, and they're floating in front of me, and I'm looking at them. They're laughing. They're cracking jokes, right? Which I was like, you know, this isn't funny. Like, I'm scared. I'm seeing these colored balls, and they're telling me they're Arcturians. And I'm like, I don't know what an Arcturian is. And I said, you guys better leave because, you know, I'm really nervous. You know, like, I don't know who you guys are. And I'm very into mystic practice. At that point in my life, I'm not into the New Age at all. I'm just into my Buddhist meditation, and I started doing a lot of Hail Marys and getting into Catholic mystic practices, and I'm like, you know what, this is a little freaky for me, these balls of light telling me they're Arcturians. Well, years later, there's a book called We the Arcturians by this woman called Norma Milanovic, and she describes the same 3 colors I saw. And it turns out there's a star in the Booth constellation called Arcturus. And then it turns out that in crop circles, and this is in William Gizecki's film, Crop Circle, The Quest for the Truth, you can see this kid on a tractor, and this ball of light the size of a beach ball in broad daylight comes up to him, and he falls asleep. It puts him in a trance, and he falls asleep, and they interviewed him after. And it turns out in all the crop circle movement, the balls of light identify themselves as Arcturians. And they're captured on cameras making the crop circles. And when the crop circle thing starts to get really big, you know, the British military intervenes. They start making fake crop circles in the middle of the real ones. They start disrupting the fields to make it look like, yeah, it's just these guys Doug and Dave, I think it is, who are with paddle boards running around. And they really did a smear job on what was really happening. Now, I saw these Arcturians myself with my eyes open. I've seen them several times. They've come back to visit me. And it's so mind-blowing to see this with your eyes open. In fact, one time when they came, I fell back asleep, tilted my head back down, and I immediately left my body and chased them. And they went up into the sky above the clouds above Malibu, California, and there were 100-mile-long motherships up there that they went into that were glowing with psychedelic color, you know, blues and purple. And so you Google the star Arcturus and the Booth constellation, and you go, I mean, how the heck, I can't be making this stuff up. It's consistent with what other people know. It's then years and years later when I was making my film The Voice in Quantum Communication at voiceentertainment.net, you know, Gary Schwartz is this Harvard psychiatrist who started studying consciousness for years at the University of Arizona, Tucson, and he believes ET contact is real, and he gets this $300,000 infrared military camera that was brought to his attention because the military started seeing things on this camera that shouldn't be there, meaning balls of light. And they asked him what he thought it was. So he gets this psychic who channels ETs, and you can, I've seen the footage, and she calls in these ETs, and these little balls of light about the size of a beach ball come zipping and flying around her head like bees. You know, just one of them. And it's on camera. I've seen this, and it's never been released to the public. And it's, this is what I mean about sensors and sensing technology. Physics doesn't acknowledge this stuff is real because they can't sense it, but they can. They're lying. They've developed the ability to interface super low, low-level, light-level cameras on the space shuttle and see these same balls of light flying in space and going, shooting up out of the Earth and going out into space.
Hey, David, it's funny you should mention that because somebody asked me what my beliefs are about aliens and other entities, and I said to them, look, everybody have the ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We rock steady, just like Black Betty. And my very special guest is David Sarita. Welcome back, sir. It's been quite pleasurable to just kind of introduce the segment and then just listen to you until the segment ends. It's quite absorbing.
Thanks. I missed the last thing you were saying. It broke up.
It was somebody asked me, I heard the feed outside that it kind of broke up a little bit. Somebody asked me last night, in fact, what my belief is about aliens. And I said to her, there are so many different accounts from different people who don't know each other all over the world, all saying the exact same thing. It's not possible, to my mind, for that to be a coincidence. It's not possible that they all imagined the same thing.
Yeah, it's not. See, when you have an experience like I had, for example, with the Arcturians, I never heard of the star Arcturus. I mean, people introduce me on radio shows, like, as a scientist, and I've studied science immensely, but in those years, I was absorbed in Buddhist and Christian-based meditation practices and meditating with monks and traveling to India, and I wasn't New Age at all. I actually wasn't into the New Age movement. I wasn't even following crop circles in the early days. And eventually, you know, what happens is, you know, when you Google something after you have experience, like I had an experience where Mary Magdalene was at the foot of my bed in Sedona, you know, when my wife and I were asleep in this deep, deep blue robe. This dark, it was about the color of sapphire, and it felt like a vacuum cleaner, her trying to pull me out of my body, and I was awake. And I'm seeing her, and I grabbed onto the sheets because I thought, you know, she's pulling me out of my body, and where is she going to take me? And I was afraid, just like anybody would be when you're seeing a ghost. And as clear as, not see-through, blurry, as clear as you can imagine. And Mary Magdalene was so powerful, and then she gave up trying to pull me out of my body, and she shows me how to decode the Mona Lisa painting. And I'm like, how could, you know, I made a movie out of it called Mona Lisa's Little Secret, and I thought, if I'm crazy and I'm schizophrenic, how would I get that? I mean, you know, watch that film, read the book that I wrote on it, and go, try to tell me that the math that she gave me is pulled right out of my hair, and I'm just out of my mind on this interpretation, because it's so flawless, and there's so much proof of what she showed me. And so every time I have a mystical experience, I test it somewhere. I got to find a scripture somewhere, like the Lankavatara Sutra, to describe the seven levels of superconsciousness, so I feel relaxed, like, you know, I'm not... There's no way you can imagine, in your imagination state, consciousness and levels of ecstasy that high. You just can't do it. There's no, like, when people say, you know, you just imagined it, like, how, you try it. You try and imagine billions and billions of suns of ecstasy and really feel it. You can't do it. There's no way you can do it. The imagination doesn't know how to do it. And so when I saw Christ, and then within days I'm seeing spirits, like, with my eyes open, I saw them for 14 years, and I've seen so many, and I remember so many of them, and I could write a book about it. When my wife was pregnant 3 years ago, when my daughter was born, when we were about 5 months into the pregnancy, every psychic was saying, it's a boy, it's a boy, so we picked out this name for a boy. And one night, I wake up because I can feel the energy when spirits come. I bolt out of bed, and there's a little girl glowing with light, and she's laughing her head off, and she's sitting next to the bed, and she's probably laughing because she knows we're going to have a girl, and all these psychics in Sedona were wrong. And so, and I look at her, and I go, oh, my God, she looks quite a bit like my wife did when she was little, like the pictures. And I'm seeing her so clearly. It's not like I'm squinting my eyes, and it's all fuzzy. I mean, it's super bright. Her aura was about as bright as brighter than the full moon by many times. And out of hundreds of ghosts I've seen, there's not very many, aside from saints, that are as bright as my daughter was when she was beside the bed. And so I told my wife, I said, you know, there's a little girl beside the bed, and she's so bright. And she goes, well, that must be Alira, our second, you know, child, and she's just coming to, you know, be near our son, you know, because he's going to be born, you know, whatever. So I kind of put that thought away, and the day my daughter was born in 2010, I just cried my eyes out in ecstasy when she came out and I held her. I said, oh my God, it was you. You were trying to show me the whole time that it was you and you were a girl. And so this is the reason I'm telling you this, is it's confirmation that this kind of stuff isn't schizophrenia. See, if it's schizophrenia, it doesn't add up anywhere. It's all whacked out. But it always adds up when I have these experiences. And eventually, you know, when I started seeing hundreds of ghosts, there were times when it was like, okay, I don't have any control of who is going to come and visit me and where they're from. And I realized from my scientific training that the language of the universe is really frequency. The planet Earth has a frequency measured by Tesla and Schumann of 7.83 hertz, or 7.83 waves a second. So I learned how to do the math to calculate the Earth's frequency, and I ended up getting NASA's data on the exact radius from satellite transmissions of all the nine planets' radiuses. I calculated the frequencies at the equator of all the nine planets in the solar system, and I went, oh my God, I can't believe what I'm seeing. If you look at the brain, and you think of a radio tuner, when you're tuning up and down the dial with the knob, you have a range of frequencies where all of your radio stations that you tune to exist, you know, in the millions of hertz, megahertz frequency modulation, which is FM, and you say, okay, that's a bandwidth, and there's a lot of bandwidth below and above this bandwidth. When I looked at the frequencies of the nine planets, I said, they fit right inside of the five major bandwidths of human brainwaves. And I said, that cannot be a coincidence, that the frequency of Earth is the frequency where we all dream. It's theta, where everyone gets rapid eye movement and you start dreaming. And I thought, you know, we're all dreaming. Half of the planet's dreaming at pretty much the same time. And we're all dreaming at the frequency scale of our own planet. So I thought, what would happen if in deep meditation or dream time, you could dream on Jupiter or dream in the Pleiades star system? Because every planet is a different size and every star is a different size. They therefore have different frequencies. Well, I built a device called the Lightstream Technologies Transmitter, which is at lightstreamtechnologies.com, and I sell these devices for people who are interested in experimenting with them, to induce out-of-body experiences by tuning your energy field to the frequencies of the Pleiadian star system, the Sirius star system, Alpha Centauri, Vega, which was the star system in the movie Contact. Because NASA knows the radius of all these different stars, I can determine their frequencies. And I can harmonically scale those frequencies into the range of the human brain. This is really amazing stuff.
Is that kind of like champagne glasses with the width of them? They all emit a certain frequency based upon that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it, because everything, if you have a glass bowl at different sizes and you ring it, the bigger the bowl, the lower the frequency, right? And then the smaller the bowl, you get the high ping sound. Well, with a sphere, a planet, at the equator, you get a nice low frequency, and as you scale up the sides of the circle and you get to the top, you get higher and higher frequencies. But most of the amplitude of the frequency is in the bandwidth of the equator. So I scaled all the frequencies up all the nine planets, and I did that for the Pleiadian star system too. And I did this 4 years ago, even before my daughter was born. And I ended up transmitting my wife, who's a wonderful jazz singer, her name is Crystal, and she's singing Fly Me to the Moon, you know, Frank Sinatra's song, which I thought was a great song to send out through my Palladian harmonic transmitter. And I thought, let's just see if the quantum universe recognizes harmonics instead of radio frequencies. And I sent her song through the transmitter. And that night, now I haven't seen a ghost in quite some time, because the last ghost I ever saw was when just before my daughter was born. So I don't see them anymore, except for when I use my technology, I have experiences with them. So it's very clear. And I ended up, so I send out the song, and that night I'm sleeping. And I think this is kind of funny, because I'm not really expecting anything to really happen. I hear this clear, mellow male voice that is so loving and calm. And it's audible. It's not like hearing something in your mind where your mind talks to itself. This is actually audible in a very, very deep sleep state. He says, congratulations, we received your message. Now what do you want to ask us? And I leap out of bed, and I'm like, oh, my God, I heard that. I said, this, and he said, it works, you reached us, you reached the Pleiades. Now, I hadn't had any contact with the Pleiades since the 60s when I saw the flying saucers. It had been my whole life. I had basically given my brain, remember, the DNA in the middle of the cell is proven to send faster than light signals. So if I was sending a radio signal to the Pleiades, it would take 440 light years to get there, approximately. And what I was doing is saying, if I pulse my DNA with those frequencies, well, my DNA jumpstart the frequencies and send them there faster than light. And it did. So I was so excited, and they said, now what do you want to ask us? And I had all these questions, you know, where have you been? Why did you appear to me when I was, you know, 7 or 8 years old, and you did me my whole life? And I'm recording these questions on a recording program on my computer, and I send them out through the transmitter. a day before my birthday, which is August 21st, as the Pleiades are rising on the horizon in Sedona. And I send out all these questions, and nothing happened that night, but two nights later, I was pulled right out of my psyche into a full contact experience with the Palladians, who answered all of my questions, whom I hadn't seen for decades. And I was so astounded at how this technology worked. Eventually, there's this movie in England called Resonance Beings of Frequency, which is all about cell phone tower pollution. But in the movie was this brilliant little clue for me. There's a Nobel Prize winner virologist named Luc Montagnier, a French virologist who studies viruses. And he proves that DNA can read all frequencies of any wavelength. In fact, even when they pulsed a frequency close to the frequency of Earth, about 7 hertz, and the Earth is about 7.5 at the equator, he said it was reading the frequency and was acting like what's known in electronics as an inductor, transmitter, receiver. I went, oh my God, that explains it. It explains why if I put the frequency of the Pleiades star system in my DNA, it's reading those frequencies. And this guy won the Nobel Prize and proved it. So that means DNA is an inductor, receiver, transmitter electronically. And the human body emits light, according to Fritz Albert Popp in Germany, faster than the speed of light. So therefore, if you give it the harmonic frequency of a distant star system, and those frequencies don't exist anywhere on this planet, the quantum universe doesn't get confused, just like radio stations don't overlap each other. Anytime you have two frequencies generated by any type of crystal or nuclear resonance at any distance, you have, at the very least, light-speed communication. And if you include DNA in your sensor, you have faster-than-light communication. So I started doing this, and I started building these transmitters, and I started regularly having contact with a designated star system. I worked with the Pleiades for years, and I had so many experiences with them that it was like opening up a portal of communication between them and myself and my wife that had been missing since my childhood. And that answered the problem for me of, one, how in ancient religious cultures, like in the ancient Rig Veda, there was a Palladian god named Kritika. And the Rig Veda is probably the oldest religious manuscript on the planet right now that we know of. And what they would have you do is chant mantras, sound vibration, until you resonated with that vibration so perfectly, and that deity would eventually appear to you. But what I discovered is that if you magnetically transmit it, it's far deeper than sound. And sound waves are not very penetrating, and not only that, they're limited to 20 to 20,000 hertz, which is the scope of the audible spectrum for most.
David, I'm sorry, we're going to have to go to break. Like REM says, everybody hurts. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is the final segment right now with David Sarita. David, I would be honored if you would do two things for me. firstly, give out your websites, and secondly, if people are wishing to use these kind of communication technologies that you're talking about, that you've invented, where would they go? How would they do it? Are they able to construct it themselves? Are there blueprints or things of this nature?
Well, I generate all the math and the frequencies myself, and so I either sell the actual audible portion of the frequencies, because some people have experiences just listening to the audio, at lightstreamtechnologies.com, or they can just email me, David Sereda, S-E-R-E-D-A, at hotmail.com. That's David Sereda at hotmail.com, to get a brochure, PDF brochure, to look at it. But I've found, you know, from 33 years of meditating, I've never had this many extremely positive experiences on the astral plane. Prior to the technology and meditating, I had very few out-of-body experiences, like the one where I went through the seven heavens was, you know, years go by and I don't have experiences like that. Whereas now I've had so many experiences almost on a weekly basis, using tuning my energy field to the frequency of a distant target. And when I realized that the human brain's frequencies all fit into the same frequencies that the nine planets generate, I realized, oh my God, well, that's induction. That's electrical induction. The transference of frequency from a transmitter to a receiver coil, and DNA is a receiver coil, that it makes perfect sense that we are tuned, and most likely our brainwaves are produced by the frequencies of our own planet. So we are cosmic beings because we're electrical. And in fact, my pendants that I sell at lightstreamtechnologies.com have already proven with aura camera photography to drastically improve the energy field of the body, which in a radio sense, you know, that's how transistors, you know, we went from tube amps to transistors, because little pieces of quartz crystal used in transistors could amplify radio signals so you had better reception. And people who wear my pendants report being more psychic and telepathic with each other just wearing them. But when we did the aura camera test on multiple subjects in Sedona using my transmitter technology, we pulsed three people with the frequencies of the Great Pyramid of Egypt. And that will, it was so mind-blowing looking at the auras. They were so much brighter. In fact, they were so bright that other people in Sedona, you know, who sell healing technologies, got jealous because they said it can't be that bright. And I said, well, yes, it is. Look at the pictures. We lit up these, you know, women like a Christmas tree. And when you're that much brighter, you're obviously that much more broadcasting, receiving, efficient. So you're more likely to have the kind of experiences I'm talking about. So I started calculating more and more healing frequencies even. In fact, we've used the devices for alternative healing frequencies and have amazing results coming in from people using it from anywhere, with people with cancer and tumors shrinking to arthritic pain going down. In fact, we had a child who broke her arm, and her arm did not work for 2 years. The nerves were completely dead. We pulsed the frequency of our sun, our own local star, and her arm was moving in 3 months. So it's amazing what frequency healing and frequency out-of-body projection targeted tuning frequencies can do spiritually. But this is where it gets difficult. There's a, because we're getting near the end, Robert Monroe at the Monroe Institute, very well known, was using sound, binaural beats, to induce out-of-body experiences. He did this test where they put him in a cage, a wired-up cage, sleeping area, and they ran no electricity through the wires, and he reported going out of body and going through the wire, no problem. But when they ran certain frequencies through the cage, he was trapped. The out-of-body master, Robert Monroe, could not get out. And this is in Claude Swanson's book, The Synchronized Universe. He's an MIT PhD who's appeared in many of my films. So what it proved is you could control the astral plane by transmitting certain frequencies into the environment, and people could not get out of body. And I found for years I was meditating and meditating, going into high states of ecstasy before I developed this technology, but I couldn't get out of my body very well. And I realized that, and like many conspiracy theorists do believe, that we are actually being mind-controlled by these huge satellites that surround our planet with frequencies to trap our consciousness into a limited, more subservient state of consciousness. And when you understand brain is an inductor, and it receives and reads frequencies indisputably by a Nobel Prize winner, you realize it's a very easy thing to do to control the electric, etheric, astral plane of the planet. In fact, I know many other good meditators whom, you know, 10, 20 years ago had no problem getting out of the Earth's astral plane and shooting out into space, and recently have encountered severe problems with getting out. That's when I realized that chemtrails were not only about weather modification. They were spraying in chemical tests done with air filters, quartz crystal dust, and certain metals, which is an oscillator. Those are the materials you need for an oscillator to amplify frequency transmissions. And I thought, oh my God, are they creating a vaporous antenna so they can use it to control the astral plane? Well, when I developed my devices, I was able to develop such a strong portal frequency in the house that at nighttime I had no problem getting out very, very frequently with these targeted star system frequencies. In fact, I've even used the frequencies of the nine planets in my sleeping meditation area, and I've been able to visit Jupiter and Saturn and have unbelievable experiences there. So we dream, remember, it's documented, we dream in theta, and theta frequencies are equal to the frequency range that you get at the equator of the Earth all the way up into North America and South America. That whole range is theta. And Venus is also in theta, whereas Mars is in alpha, which is what you need when you're awake to be very coherent, and Mars is right next door. And its frequencies reach us in a matter of seconds because it's so close to us. So it makes perfect sense when you understand that every planet is a different, like the glass bowl or the wine glass, they're producing different tonal frequencies. And it's quite expensive to do this right now. I mean, my transmitters range from $1,200 to $1,800 now with all of the different destination frequencies, but we're going to make them into apps for people. It won't be as anywhere near as high of a quality experience, but at least you'll be able to listen to the tones through your iPhone so you can experience the sound. See, NASA recorded the sound of our sun. They actually recorded it. And when I listened to the sounds, it was low, medium, and high frequencies all in one, kind of pulsing. And the mantra OM in the Rig Veda comes from the sound of our sun. It means the sound of our sun. So when we chant OM, We're trying to resemble the sound that our star makes, and that's what it sounds like, but it has some very high notes in there, too. And that's because the frequencies get higher near the poles, and they get lower at the equator of the belly of the star. So I did that scaling to all of the different star systems, and you get a full-body sound in the Pleiades because it's just beautiful listening to the different tones of the different star systems just audibly. And people are going to be able to do this very inexpensively for $10 with the app that we're coming out with soon.
I do find that that's a great way, because I think we're currently saturated by dirty electronic pollution, and as you say, it's preventing people from obtaining higher consciousness, astral travel, and so on and so forth. And now we're using that precise same system that's designed to keep us out of that realm with an app to bring us back into it. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, see, all these frequencies, like, you know, when you're in an apartment building and you go to click on your internet and you realize there's 100 other people's Wi-Fi signals sitting on top of your brain, and you have to select your channel for your Wi-Fi to get it transmitting. Well, all those Wi-Fi signals in a downtown cluster are all bombarding your brain. And the only way you can you can really get clear consciousness, because your brain is reading those frequencies. You know, this is proven, is to reinsert frequencies that are harmonic into your house. And speakers, you know, sound speakers have a very limited frequency range. You know, good speakers, maybe 30 hertz to 20,000 hertz. But my transmitter will do ultra-low frequencies, way less than one wave a second, all the way through the audible, all the way up to super high frequencies. But I'm not transmitting any microwaves. So microwaves are the EMF spectrum that is harmful to the cells in the body. Your Wi-Fi is microwave. So we're now facing the problem that Wi-Fi and satellite communications, the military mind control frequencies, are dictating the scope of where your brain is allowed to go.
You know, it doesn't sound entirely dissimilar from the public education system. David, thank you so much for your time today. VoiceEntertainment.net, LightStreamTechnologies.com, email them today. We'll see you again.